right, welcome to the Pacifica Radio Network's live coverage of No King's Day, October 18th, 2025. I'm your host, Jenna Flanagan, coming to you from Pacifica's WBAI studios in New York City. We are now in our last hour of coverage, relying on our team of dozens of reporters and producers across the United States. We brought you the signs, the sounds, and the growing resistance from Maine to Hawaii, from Florida to Alaska. Now, back on June 14th, the first time we had No King's Day, which was organized just over 2,000 local No King's Days, and an estimated 5 million people turned out. Today, there were 2,700, that is, such events that inspired 7 million people to turn out. So we go back to where we started with Arnie Arneson, the host of The Attitude, which is heard across the Pacifica Radio Network and originates from WNHN, our Pacifica affiliate in Concord, New Hampshire. Arnie, welcome to the show.
What a fun day. I'm exhausted. I don't know about you, but what a fun day. I started in a little rural community of Orford, New Hampshire, a population of 1,200 people, okay? And they met on a bridge between Orford and Fairleigh,
Arnie,
Vermont.
Arnie, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I hate to interrupt, but I think we have to go to the live feed because
Angela
Davis.
Oh, no, do live.
Is speaking in San Francisco.
Immigrants. We are all citizens of the world, whether we have papers or not. And we are here to say that we are in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And that a ceasefire is not enough. We want an end to the ongoing violence of the Israeli occupation. We want freedom and self-determination in Gaza and the West Bank. And so we are here to say no to racism. And no to anti-Semitism. And no to the weaponization of anti-Semitism to attack those who stand against genocide. We stand for reproductive justice, the right to abortion, reproductive care, trans justice, and the right to resources for the children we choose to welcome into our lives. And we stand with the people of Haiti and the people of Sudan and the people of Congo and every other place on the planet where there is a fight against capitalism, against empire, and against settler colonialism. We stand with those who support science, public education, and free universities. And we want to join the rest of the planet in combating the dangers of climate change. The dangers of climate change for human as well as non-human animals. And finally, we stand with abolitionists and freedom fighters of the world, and with everyone who not only seeks to dismantle unjust systems, but who is imagining and actively creating new, and habitable futures. Free Palestine! Thank you.
All right, that was Angela Davis speaking live at the No Kings rally in San Francisco. I am currently speaking with Arnie Arneson, a host of The Attitude, which can be heard across the Pacifica Network, but comes from WNHN, our affiliate in Concord. And I'm also speaking with Teresa Purcell from Washington State, founder of the Rural Strong Network, which helps empower rural communities that are all too often marginalized. However, before I continue my conversation with Arnie, who I'm so sorry I had to cut off, I do want to go to one of our reporters, Riza Smith, who is coming to us from Anchorage, Alaska, by way of KVRK. Riza, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. All right. You know, when it comes to issues across the country, so often we forget about Alaska. What is happening in Anchorage right now? Riza, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So tell me a little bit about what the protest has been like.
So it's actually been kind of interesting. I think that was like one of the things, like a lot of people hear about Alaska and they're like, oh, it's all Republican. It's like, it's super red state. But I think one of the funny things was the first protest, they're pretty small. There's like maybe 10 people. Then like 50 people, then like 200. And then I think it was like back in April, we had one where it just exploded, like 3,500 people, 7,000 people downtown and like across the state. I think the last No Kings event had 15,000 people. So it's just been snowballing size wise.
So when it comes to a protest that size in a state like Alaska, I just want to really underline here that there are a lot of like small towns and communities where maybe there are 20, 30 people or something. So did you get the sense that there were people who traveled from a distance to make sure that they were known, seen, and heard in Anchorage today?
One of the funny things is it's not even just in Anchorage. So we've got a town out in the middle of Alaska. It's called Gustavus. So there's not a lot of people there. Like, there's places in Alaska where there's even 70 people maybe total in the town. They're still showing up, but we do have a lot of people that come to Anchorage just to kind of hang out, be part of this moment.
Okay. And so as we were talking with reporters from across the country, we were also hearing that when it came to at least the messages that people were seeing on the signs and what protesters were saying, that the presence of ICE in their communities, ICE raids, that was a really, really big issue. I'm wondering, was that the same for Alaska? That is ICE even an issue, or are there other things like the president's relationship with Vladimir Putin, perhaps?
Honestly, there's so much going on just because we do have a lot of people from around the world. Like, Alaska is super diverse, but on top of that, his relationship with Vladimir Putin is so problematic because there's times where he's misspoken and he said, oh, yeah, let's give Alaska back to Russia. Or, oh, I'm flying up to Russia back in August for the summit. And it's concerning at times just because we don't know what he's willing to do or give up. And that all kind of hits home. There's a lot of people where this is their home. We're not trying to get sold to a country. We're not trying to get kidnapped or, you know, deported or, you know, taken down to Tacoma for processing. It hits close to home for a lot of Alaska.
Of course, of course. And so is there any concern on the part of Alaskans? I mean, when it also comes to the affordability issue, we know down in the lower 48, that's a big issue for a lot of people. But is that also really, really starting to put the squeeze on Alaskans?
We're going to get hurt. I shouldn't laugh. Like, I'm laughing mostly as like a nervous thing. But
well, I was going to say it's either that or cry too. Sometimes.
Yeah, no, like it's nervous. But like the numbers we're seeing, summer as high as 340%, right? So for people that are like, oh, I've got like a little family, I've got something, maybe all of that worked with ACA funding and everything else in the past, they might have paid like a few hundred dollars. We're seeing some people jump up from $300 to $2,200. No notice, no abrupt, you know, kind of, hey, by the way, this is going to happen. It's just happening, and it's going to affect small business owners. It's going to affect individuals here, especially people who might not be part of, like, a company or work a standard 9-to-5.
All right. Well, actually, I want to bring in one of my panel guests, Teresa Purcell, who, again, is the Washington State founder of the Rural Strong Network. And Teresa, the economic squeeze that Americans felt going in to the 24 election, and now a year later, almost, it seems to be almost suffocating.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that's happening is everybody is talking about all of the giant federal issues, and a lot of that hasn't impacted us yet, haven't impacted us yet. But the reality is that so much of what the federal government has clawed back, like the rural broadband and the clean energy money and all of the healthcare issues, these have had devastating impacts on rural communities. And people are showing up. I mean, I'm just seeing my Facebook feed and my social media is just filled with friends from all over the country that are not having to drive to a big city to express themselves. They're doing this in their own community. And that's a really big deal, is that for, you know, the first couple of these rallies, of these protests, people didn't feel comfortable necessarily doing it at home. But now there's thousands of people showing up in small towns all over the country that are just, they're sick and tired of it. And I just also want to add that local elected officials are doing the same harm. There is so much harm happening at the local level from a lot of these Republican elected officials that's what they're fed up with too, is they're feeling these impacts.
All right. Well, before we continue with our conversation, I just want to say a big thank you to Ryza Smith. I understand you have a whole bunch of other stuff to do, a lot of tape to process, I'm sure. But Ryza, coming to us from Anchorage, Alaska, KVRK, thanks so much for joining us. Arnie, I want to come back to you and really go further with this affordability issue. I mean,
and I also want to touch on Alaska.
Yeah.
And the thing is that what we know is they just had a typhoon, okay?
Yeah.
And we saw the biggest airlift probably ever in American history, because they were moving thousands of people who'd been flooded out. Maybe only one or two, three people died, which is kind of remarkable in a lot of ways. But I want to remind everyone that the EPA canceled a $20 million flood protection grant for Alaska and this basic area. They also made cuts in NOAA, so they didn't have enough balloons up in the air to indicate where the typhoon was coming. I just want people, the consequences are real. The consequences were Alaska. I mean, I'd be outraged because of what just happened with that typhoon. That would drive me on top of all the other cuts that we're seeing in rural hospitals and healthcare and affordability and all. They saw the direct impact of what it means. They were expendable. They were expendable. And I think if you are seeing these turnout, you don't even need to go to Anchorage. You just need to show up in the street and just say, this is wrong. But for those communities, there are no streets. There are no houses. There are no infrastructure. They were swept away. They were swept away. And my question then becomes, what happens to them now? And with this administration, I'm terrified of the answer.
Well, of course. I mean, shameless promotion here, but on my show, We Decide America at the Crossroads, airing Monday mornings at 9. But more importantly, though, no, we've spoken to the communities in North Carolina that were hit by the hurricane. We spoke to communities in Texas who were hit by that horrific flood. And again, we're seeing more and more how natural disasters that aren't people aren't properly warned about, and there isn't a robust response or a response that people let in, because in all fairness, the hurricane did happen during the previous administration, but so many people had heard enough misinformation to not trust FEMA. I do want to ask,
Can I just add one thing very quickly on that? Because the Alaska situation is also another example of the absence of media.
Yes.
Oh, very much.
Thank you.
Because that story is devastating and heartbreaking and got almost no attention. And the harm and the only way that we get any accountability from the federal government, or frankly from the Alaska government or any government, is if people put pressure on the elected officials to do the right thing. And with no media, it's almost impossible to do that. So we all need to be paying attention to how do we get these stories out. And you guys are doing a fabulous job, but shameless promotion of you guys, but to really make that happen. But it is so important that we keep the eye on those stories that are devastating to rural communities.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up media because, of course, we very recently, I can't even go over the whole domino effect, but basically before the FCC was a possibility or a business opportunity for one of the media corporations to blow past the cap on the number of stations that they're able to own and buy more. Now, for everybody who followed that story very closely, yada, 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 Jimmy Kimmel off the air, Jimmy Kimmel back on the air. But there is a large consolidation of corporate ownership of the media that we're able to take in, which, in my opinion, makes public media or nonprofit media like our stations even more valuable. But that aside, my little soapbox moment. Arnie, I want to go back also when we talk about the issue of affordability. That this has been something you were starting to talk about it before we had to cut to the live feed, but that this is an issue that has affected so many Americans. And I'm wondering if what we're seeing in these protests are the new silent majority.
Oh, God. Absolutely. So many people I have met, they have never been to a protest. Okay. Never. And suddenly, not only did they want to be there because they were so frightened and so frustrated, but then there's this synergistic effect of seeing other people. You don't talk about what happens in your family when you have a cut. You don't talk about when you had to drop your health insurance because you didn't have the money. You don't talk about the fact that you can't afford the rent. It's not something you're proud of, all right? But you know that you're hurting. And then all of a sudden, what these events are places where you get to share your story and you realize you're not alone. And then you're angry when you see that so many people in your community are hurting too. And that's when all of a sudden it becomes something where, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I think the really good point is it's not just what's happening in Washington. It's the MAGA governors. It's the MAGA legislatures. They are making it even worse. I mean, that's the problem. They're making tax cuts for the rich at the federal level. They're making tax cuts for the rich at the local level. That's what they're doing. They're accommodating dirty industries. They're ignoring the climate crisis. They're not investing in public education. And what happens at these events is I feel like they're a little bit like freedom fairs, okay? Mm-hmm. Because where we were, there were tables of different groups that were talking about immigration, that were talking about rental housing, that were talking about Gaza. Every table had a different raison d'être. But then all of a sudden you realize you could go to two or three tables because that was your life. That was your life at those tables. And they were representing your life. And then there was music, and then there was costumes. And I think all of a sudden, it was a relief to be around people who were living your pain, but it was also a joy to know that there were people ready to fight with you and fight for you and fight for you. We're so disappointed in our elected officials, and all of a sudden we saw each other, and that's where the disappointment dissolves, because ultimately we saw we have the power. Now we have to exercise it.
Teresa, I'm also wondering, especially from someone who is the founder of the Rural Strong Network, is this also to a degree a great awakening? Because, listen, as painful as it is to say, a lot of these MAGA governors and red state legislatures, didn't. Yes, there were a lot of people who did not vote, but there were a lot of people who did vote to put them in office. Do you feel like there's a great awakening amongst especially rural communities that are just like, this is not working for us?
Well, I think that, yes, absolutely. But I also think that there's two really important notes is that, you know, the Democratic Party has really ignored rural America for far too long. Mm. And they don't have an economic message for us. They don't have, they haven't paid any attention to us. And there is a real lack of engagement and authentic engagement. And then the other thing that you have happening right now is you have a bunch of hyper-partisan people on the left and the right, but most people just want things to work. And right now we have both of the democracy, a government, and an economy that doesn't work for the vast majority of Americans. And people are fed up. And so we need to be getting people running. 70% of offices go unchallenged. You know, we need to get people running. And in counties all across the country, there is no competition. And so we really need to look at how do we give people voice? And that's really what the Rural Strong Network and Longview Action is focused on, is how do we actually return governance to the people? How do we create a representative democracy? How do we actually make sure that folks know what their government is doing and hold people accountable for doing the right thing for the people? One of my favorite signs, I wanted to comment on Arnie's comment, which is, The pictures I'm seeing are joyful. There's tons of costumes and music, and that pain is turning into it's almost a catharsis of people saying, oh my God, I'm not alone. We can get through this. And the thing I loved today, I saw a sign that said, make America ours again.
Yes.
Wow.
That is the power of giving people voice. And that's really what we're all trying to do through this work. And yes, rural America voted for Republicans because they were running and they were talking about how terrible the Democrats were in a vacuum where the Democrats weren't there. Mm. And in 2024, the Democrats didn't have an economic message for anybody. And we need to focus on how do we make sure, you wanted to talk about the price increases. Those are just getting astronomically worse. But who's actually helping create a new economy where AI and, you know, we're not losing farms every day. We're not losing jobs every day. We're not actually admitting that some of the regulations are actually not in service to both either people or the planet. And so we need to be having these conversations in a really real way, and we need to be engaging people in those conversations.
And can I just reiterate what you said, that most of these, a lot, especially in rural areas, there's no competition. There's only one person on the ballot. It's the only message they hear. What you don't know about me is I ran from a town of 1,200 people, all right? 1,200 is where I started my career. I was the first Democrat to ever win. I ended up running for governor. But when I ran for governor, guess what I brought with me? Those 1,200 people, rural New Hampshire. What's going to happen when they shut the mills down? Where do they go? Where's the next hospital coming from? What we see, they're talking about suddenly now all these rural hospitals shutting down. Wake up and smell the coffee. They've been shutting down for the last 20 years. This isn't new. It's just speeding up. Suddenly you notice? Well, I'm thinking, oh, my God, they haven't had an OBGYN in the local hospital for the last 7 years. So you have to go 2 hours to have a baby. So I think here's the interesting thing. If we could find a voice for rural America, we would find a voice for all of America. And by ignoring rural America, we have actually ignored ourselves. This is the part that makes me absolutely crazy. And so I think you're right about this. But what is the most important thing is that not only everyone thinks that you have to win when you run. You have to run. And the reason why you have to run is that you finally offer some dialogue in communities that never hear the other side, that never hear how policy could change their lives, that don't reflect the kind of pain that they're experiencing. And out of that, even that loss, I started the show this morning by this great quote by Bella Abzug. Bella Abzug said, you have to lose, lose, lose to win, to win. But if you never start and you never lose the first time, you never get to a win. So I think the important thing is to not only figure out where to have our independent media so we can tell those stories, but we have to show up everywhere and we have to run everywhere. Every American deserves a choice.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, I actually
Amen.
want to go to one of our reporters. We have, I'm going to try to get this right, Annie Caporuscio. Who is coming to us from KKCR in the state of Hawaii. And so, Annie, can you hear me? Annie, are you there? Okay, we might have lost Annie. We might have to break back in very quickly to get to Annie again. But what you were both saying, I think, is so incredibly true. And when we talk about, the new silent majority who today made themselves not so silent. My other question Is there enough glue that came out today to hold this together? Because one of the biggest criticisms of just the left side of the aisle and everybody who encompasses it is that it factions into fiefdoms very quickly. And Arnie, I'll start with you.
I think the pain is so universal that in a way that's the gift of Donald Trump. The gift of Donald Trump is he's providing us with the glue. All right. That's really what he's doing, because all of a sudden you're not in your silo. You're not in your fiefdom, because all of a sudden all those fiefdoms are overlapping. If you can't go to a doctor when you're sick because what they've done to the Medicaid cuts and what they're doing with the ACA, then you're worried. But if you're worried about that, guess what? That means you don't have enough money to do what? To buy groceries. And then what does that mean? You don't have enough money to do what? To be able to find an affordable place to live. Then all these things end up, they're wedded to each other. That's what they're doing. The hurt is wedding us to each other, because it's not a separate hurt, because each hurt touches the next hurt. And I think as a result, that's why there is going to be this glue, because what the basics are that we need and want, he is hurting all of us in those basics. And that's ultimately what will drive us to the polls, if we can show them that we have a policy answer, that government can work for people, that government can make a difference in their lives, that the right policy can fix something, but the wrong policy or the lack of regulation or basically aiding and abetting the rich and forgetting about everything else, that hurts 90% of us. And guess what? We are the majority and we can take our government back.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to try one more time. I believe we have Annie Capibruscio back on the line again. Annie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us, how did the No Kings Day protests go in the state of Hawaii, considering we're also talking about multiple different islands and so many different groups of people?
Well, I can speak to Kauai Island. We are the westernmost outer island of Hawaii State, mm-hmm. And we have not yet started our protest today. We have our biggest protest is going to be in the town, in the county seat in Lihue, from 3 to 5 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time, and that's going to be in about an hour and a half. And the protest is expected to draw in the thousands. And that's a really big deal. We're a small rural community. There's 75,000 people on the island as residents. And to draw that many people to one place is a very big deal. Another notable thing about the No Kings Day protest in Hawaii, it's been rebranded as a No Dictators protest, as there are Hawaiian royalty bloodlines walking among us every day here. And so the kingship is very precious to Hawaiian culture. And so it's been rebranded as a No Dictators protest in the island.
And that's one of the ways the cultural literacy comes into play. Wondering, though, if there is any expected, perhaps, people who were affected by the horrific wildfires on the island of Maui coming out to this as well, because I understand that people are still in the process of trying to reclaim their lives and rebuild.
Yes, I imagine that Maui is going to have a sizable protest as well. And there are people that are still affected by that. FEMA still sends out newsletters and is still providing temporary housing assistance for the folks on Maui. That's still a big deal. Hawaii has 35,000 federal employees that are ostensibly working without pay or are furloughed right now.
Wow, so that's got to be hitting the economy pretty bad.
Yes, in a population of 1.4 million, 35,000 is a sizable chunk of people not making and spending money.
And is there any sense that there's any kind of, I guess, like support system or something? Like, I know, as you were pointing out, especially when it comes to rebranding it as No Dictators, because there is Hawaiian royalty, that this is almost, I don't want to say a last straw, because it certainly isn't that. But the indigenous people of the island of Hawaii have put up with a lot when it comes to the American government. So I wonder, I'm being very generous here. And so I'm wondering if this is just feeling like just enough already.
In Hawaii, we generally get the sense that we are not touched by the federal government as well. It's very far away. It doesn't do much for us. It's like we're very untouched by it. But currently, we're feeling it a lot. And it's kind of a big deal. And to have that government power actually affecting us right now is bad. Hawaiian people, Hawaiian culture want nothing to do with it. And if it is actually affecting us, real bad.
Yeah. So, Annie, just a few more quick questions here, because I am on the line with it's not just myself. I'm also on with Arnie Arneson, who is the host of The Attitude, which is heard across the radio network, and also Teresa Purcell, who is the founder of the Rural Strong Network. And I'm wondering if either one of you have any questions in regarding to the No Kings protests soon to happen in Hawaii.
I have a question. So I'm kind of curious, how are the tariffs playing out in Hawaii? Because as you said, that you seem to be somewhat, you know, you're cocooned in a way from what's happening on the mainland. But I am wondering about what's happening as a result of the tariffs, what's happening as the result of the visa issues and the immigration policies and tourism. Because when I think of Hawaii, I think of tourism, you know, and I'm just wondering whether you're beginning to see that ripple effect beginning to affect your economic outlook.
Tourism is our biggest industry in Hawaii. We have the military and we have tourism as our two biggies out here. And as far as tariffs go, I think the prices for everything are going up. Our groceries are very high. You know, a loaf of bread that 2 years ago was $6 is now $12.
Oh,
a significant jump. Coupled with the tariffs and already high prices, we have inter-island transport via sea. It's a company called Young Brothers, and Young Brothers is increasing their rates by 21%. And so outer islands are going to see higher prices overnight come this season. This quarter is going to be even higher than they have been. And that's sort of pinching us. And as a result, Native families have to leave. They're priced out of their homes. They're priced out of their jobs, out of their living. Their affordable living is gone. And so they typically make the decision to move to the West Coast or Las Vegas and thus lose their connection with home and land and aina, as it is.
Wow. Is there any indication that the union movement in whatever form that takes on the island is, or on the islands of Hawaii, is still very strong? Because for a while there, Hawaii had one of the highest union densities in the nation.
Okay. I did not know that. I don't know what the unions are up to right now. I can't speak to that. I know that there is a medical strike with the Kaiser affiliates.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything else coming out of the union right now. I know that any ICE raids, the last time I checked, we had 146 people deported from the state of Hawaii, and they were mostly in the farming and the hotel industry.
Wow.
That's all I am.
Wow. No, yeah. That's still, though, that's a lot of people. Annie, I want to thank you so much for taking time to join us, and we look forward to your reporting from the No Dictators protests once they start.
The No Dictators protests, the westernmost No Dictators protest in our nation today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me today.
All right.
Aloha.
So, Arnie and Teresa, here's one of my questions coming out of not only that conversation, but just out of the protests, etc. One of Americans seems to be Achilles' heel is the fact that we are a very comfortable people. We really like to be comfortable. And as listening to the live feeds from some of the larger protests in Chicago and San Francisco, I'm hearing some of these speakers say, like, we're going to have to make some choices that might make some of us temporarily mildly inconvenienced or uncomfortable. And that's not something Americans traditionally have been good at. So I'm wondering from your perspectives, do you see people being able to hold through? I mean, we've seen, you know, to be clear, we've seen Black women decide they're not going back to Target and Target stock has plummeted. Does everybody else have that kind of resolve?
I think I'm going to jump in here. This is Teresa, because I think that there's a couple things that are really important to note, and this kind of goes back to the glue question, is that the resolve is really going to be centered on what are we asking people to do?
Aha.
And do they feel like it is having some impact? Because I think that that is where the real challenge is, because it's not necessarily just, you know, a policy question. It's how are we getting people, how are we connecting with people in a new way? How are we actually having them see that government does play a positive role in their life, and that discomfort is actually going to come from having a government that is completely failing them, and that is, has, you know, been devastated to such a degree that, you know, we're not funding public libraries, we're not funding hospitals, we're not funding healthcare, we're not funding public education, some of the things that are core to American values. You know, let's talk about childcare. You know, let's talk about those things that allow working families to make ends meet, which so many families aren't making ends meet right now. So I think that there already is a really, really high level of discomfort. And I think where we're missing the mark a little bit is we're talking about very high level stuff, when what people really just want to have happen is they just want somebody to focus on how are we going to make stuff better? How are we going to make it work? How are we going to get regular people running and serving so somebody who understands my life is actually making the decisions about what it looks like to serve in Congress or on the county commission for that matter? I mean, we're looking at utility rates skyrocketing. I mean, every mm-hmm. decision has an impact that has, it's a pond in a pebble in a pool. And the ripple effects of so many of these decisions are increasing the discomfort of the American public. And we need to have a strategy that actually lets them operationalize how to take that, you know, take power back from where we've been left behind for so long. And I think that that's really what we have to be looking for is don't buy from here, don't do this, but really let's focus on the solutions that actually will make a difference for people and really try and make sure that we're coming to the table with solutions so people can feel good about what they're trying to do.
The mutual aid part of it. Yeah, I'm hearing that. I guess, yeah. Arnie, your thoughts as well?
Yeah. So I'm hearing now is a lot of women are dropping out of the workforce. Some of them are being forced out because of the federal cuts to the workforce because of things like DEI. But I also think that we have to begin to understand that if women are leaving the workforce, it's called a cost-benefit analysis. And that is women are only earning about 80 cents on the dollar compared to men. The cost of childcare can be hundreds and hundreds of dollars a week. Mm-hmm. Now we see an increase in electricity bills, an increase in food bills, an increase in your insurance. And then you see how do you pay for it all? Because going to work has a cost too. All right. You have a transportation. So I think the economy has to suddenly realize that if people are dropping out, it's because they can't even survive working. That they can't even make it working. And when that happens, then an economy crashes. So I think that's another reason why we have to start looking at all those things that policy can make a difference on. Free childcare is not just good for families, it's good for business.
It's also good for the birth rate, which dropped off a cliff.
That's the other thing. Why would you have a child if you suddenly, my daughter came from China and she brought her baby with her. And she said, Mom, I'm earning $18 an hour as a para, and my child care is $400 a week. You tell me how I feed my family. I mean, this is insane. So if you start doing the math for families and start doing the math and attach it to policy, you can suddenly say, not only do I see your struggle, but let me tell you what will resolve that struggle. And that is the, you know, the credits with the ACA. That is the expansion of Medicaid. That is affordable housing. That is free childcare. And as you add those things up and you do it by math, then all of a sudden people realize not only are you seeing their lives, but you're making their lives better. And that policy can make their lives better. And if you don't have those policies, the kind of struggle is not even fathomable anymore, because it's getting so difficult. And then throw in things like climate crisis, throw in all those other things, and I think you will see why people are suddenly showing up at these events. And not only are they showing up at these events, but we need to give them a reason not only to show up at an event, but to then exercise the franchise and vote for change. And we need to find the candidates that offer them that change.
All right, let's hang on to that thought, because we have Sandy Redding, I believe, who is the president of CNA, speaking live in San Francisco. Let's toss to that speech right now.
And titles mean nothing unless you do something with them, right? So I've been canvassing in my area. I live in Bakersfield, California, and I've been knocking doors to flip those seats. Maybe I wasn't supposed to say that. Okay, what a day this has been. Can you please give it up for all of our speakers, for yourselves, for marching, and for just being here, and for those that worked for us so we could be there, here. I came today from Bakersfield because our union, CNA, NNOC, NNU, that's quite a mouthful, believes in leading by example. And we want our example to be action, just like the action you all took to be here today. Is this enough? No, we gotta do stuff, right? So earlier this year in Glendale, ICE brought someone they had detained in for treatment at one of our hospitals and camped out there 4 weeks. While they were treated, federal agents sat behind desks in the hospital lobby threatening patient safety. And when this happens, we nurses know what it means. It means patients aren't going to come to the hospital. They're afraid. And we want to make sure that everybody is taken care of. I joined those nurses in Glendale to demand that we keep ICE out of our hospitals in California. And I wasn't afraid to do it. They wouldn't let me in, but they'd let the ICE agents in. So I just went on Instagram, and after that, they let me in. Thank you. But it needed to be done. Oh, I did a press conference, too. Yeah, my corporation wasn't too happy about it. But that's not all. We're fighting against, right? In our communities, they're pulling funding from hospitals that already need more resources and are now in danger of being closed. Millions of people stand to lose their health insurance because President Trump is defunding healthcare. For us as nurses, that means millions more impossible conversations about medication, a procedure, a hospital stay that someone can't afford to skip, but also can't afford to pay. It means suffering and death. Does that have to be our future? No. We can fight for our neighbors, for our rights, and fight for a world where every single person gets the health care they deserve as a human right. As proud union nurses, we say it with me, no kings. And we say, union, yes. We say no to profiteering health care, and yes to universal health care. Yes to Medicare for all and CalCare. We say no to hospital shutdowns. No to fascist crackdowns. While we say yes to democracy, and yes to making our voices heard in places like this, in places everywhere. And we have to stand up for the vulnerable and not be afraid. Today's No King event may be almost over, but this fight didn't start this morning. And it doesn't end tonight. Whether you're a nurse or not, join NNU to keep fighting back at NNU.org. nursein red.org/funcare, or find a nurse in red and ask us. So we have to keep fighting, keep organizing, keep working with your neighbors, your classmates, your co-workers, your communities to build power against this regime. Together, we can show them who's really in charge. Kind of like the operating room. Everybody knows who's in charge, right? So we got to take our country back. Because you take on one of us, you take on all of us. Say it again, you take on one of us, you take on all of us. Thank you so much.
All right, our program is wrapping up, but our movement is not wrapping up.
So all right.
Let's say no kings.
I think that's... That's the perfect note to leave it on. The program in San Francisco is wrapping up, but the movement is not wrapping up. Arnie and Teresa, I mean, where do you see those words taking us going forward?
So I think it's almost appropriate that we ended with the last voice from a union organizer.
Because
unions know what to do. They know how to take on the boss. Okay, they know how to take on the power structure, and they know that they can't do it by, you know, social media. They have to do it with their bodies. They know they have to do it by showing up. They know they have to do it by locking arms. They know they have to do it by sitting down saying, this is what we want in the contract, and they're specific. These are the terms we must have in order to go back to work. Well, you know what? Those terms in a contract are kind of like policy with a government. It's the same thing. So not only should we support unions, but unions are our role model in how to fight. And I think that's so important. And more than anything else, what you really see with the union is that you have to show up. This is not a virtual fight. This is a fight that requires your body, your heart, your soul, and you have to connect with your neighbor. That's what they do with the union. That's how we're going to take back this country. We have to learn from them, expand on them, and then take their voice and their power and, frankly, exhibit their behavior. Because their behavior is the behavior we need to see in every election going forward.
And Teresa, your thoughts?
Yes, I just wanted to add that one of the things that is so powerful about the unions and is the presence of unions in rural communities. There are teachers' unions and nurses' unions and machinists and loggers and the farm union folks and all those, and those are not being leveraged into these conversations to a high enough degree because we don't have the economic focus. We have to, again, really come in and be working together, build a broad coalition of people who want to make stuff work and who are really focused on basically providing evidence that things will get better if we elect a different set of people at every level of government in our communities. And that we need to be working with the community and across issues, across unions, across ideologies, to be perfectly honest, because in some communities there's tension between the unions and the environmental community. We all want to save the planet, but let's figure out how to get there. Let's figure out how to be creating manufacturing jobs that are union jobs in communities. Let's build out cooperatives and collectives and build out new business structures. And let's make sure that union workers, that unions have a space, and also that workers are getting paid. And so, and unions know how to do it. They are the best organizers. They are the most disciplined strategists, and they know how to do it. And we need to get back to that kitchen table conversations, having the union organizer show up at your, you know, Friday night dinner and talking to people about the real work of what it means to build community by showing up and listening and helping folks get stuff done for their community.
All right. Well, we are fortunately going to have to leave it there. This has been an absolutely amazing day, and I am so honored to be part of it. But I want to thank my final two guests. Of course, you just heard from Teresa Purcell, who is in Washington State and founder of the Rural Strong Network, which helps empower rural communities that are far too often overlooked and marginalized. And you also heard from Arnie Arneson, the host of The Attitude, which is heard across the Pacifica Radio Network and originates from WNHN, our Pacifica affiliate in Concord, New Hampshire. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for asking us. And don't forget that what we saw today were people were practicing hope. That's what they were doing. They were practicing hope. And there were millions that showed up. I love it.
Yes, thank you so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's our show. We promise six time zones and one nation network, indivisible, and we delivered thanks to the 50 people, including the 20-plus reporters it took to make this happen. Thanks to our hardworking SAG-AFTRA engineers, Sean Rhodes, Wee Jacobs, as well as our 24-7 field engineer, Jake Glantz. We're grateful to our producers, Keziah Glow, can't say enough, Jonah Schweitzer, also awesome, and Bob Henley, a classic. Of course, our regional anchors, Norm Stockton, Maeve Conran, Althea Billings, were essential guides, as well as my colleague, Juliana Florano, who carried the torch earlier today. This is a huge country, and we really, really felt that today. Special thanks also to Lisa Loving and Ursula Ruttenberg and Stephanie Schubert with the Pacifica Radio Affiliate Network. We're grateful to our legal counsel, Norman Siegel, who gave us an inspirational training session to prepare for today's work. Thanks to the Pacifica National staff, John Amila, Otis McClay, and Mo Thomas, as well as to Pacifica Foundation's Executive Director, Stephanie Wells. This program is made possible thanks to listeners just like you and contributions from unions representing 3 million households, including this partial list, the New York City Central Labor Council, AFL-CIO, UAW Local 259, the American Federation of Government Employees representing 800,000 federal workers in all 50 states, 1199 SEIU, the largest union of healthcare workers in the nation, representing 450,000 members, United Federation of Teachers, United Auto Workers Region 9A, 32BJ SEIU, America's largest building service union, representing more than 185,000 workers in 12 states, and Washington, D.C., and the Transport Workers Union of America. Please check out our website, PacificaNetwork.org, and use our station locator to find an affiliate near you. Pacifica Radio Network is composed of WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., KPFT in Houston, KPFK in Los Angeles, and KPFA in San Francisco, as well as 210 affiliate community radio stations located in over 40 states. My name is Jenna Flanagan. For the Pacifica Radio Network, it has been my honor to be a host for No King's Day. Thank you.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Althea Billings here, coming at you back from earlier in the broadcast. Want to make a couple quick thank yous to everybody at KBOO that helped make our participation in the Pacifica live stream possible. Thank you to Jezaniah Hawthorne, Jasmine Moss, Hannah Francis, Anna Wilcox, Lisa Loving, Ray Bodwell, Terrence Burns, Eric Leuschner. These are the folks that helped make it happen today. Thank you to WBAI and to the Pacifica Network. I'm Althea Billings. Stick with us. We got Blues Junction coming at you next.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions.
The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry Arm, woman liberationist, and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.